Hello, my name is Brian Novoshelsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter podcast. Today, we are joined by Luke Turnock, a senior lecturer in criminology at the University of Lincoln in England, and an expert on drug markets and enhancement drugs, among many other areas. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today, Luke.
Oh, thank you for having me, Brian.
So today, we're going to be discussing drug advertising on social media and how it may impact patients, providers, and public health in general. So Luke, to start, it's pretty obvious that drug advertising has increased immensely in recent years, whether it's social media, TV, or somewhere else. Why do you think this is?
Yeah, so there's kind of two factors that I think are quite important, particularly when looking at these enhancement drugs. So the first factor that I think is important is just the rise of social media appears to have fueled a lot of advertisements that aren't necessarily being regulated in the way that they were traditionally over here. You know, we have the Advertising Standards Agency, the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, and they typically would prevent adverts for medicines. There'd be restrictions and there'd be fines and serious issues if people were advertising, say, on TV. What's happened with social media is essentially, to some extent, I think there's just too much content for them to regulate. There's difficulties with how do you regulate international content. So say you're listening to a podcast from the US and they have an advert for a medicine that's technically restricted here. How do you regulate that? So there's been quite a few issues, and the MHRA, the ASA, they've actually tried to give enforcement notices to certain companies that are advertising on social media with mixed results. Often not much gets done as a result of those cases. And that's with the more, you know, company-based advertising thing. Along with that, obviously we have influencers and people just discussing their experiences of using certain drugs. So if it's like testosterone, for instance, TRT, it's very difficult to regulate somebody just talking about their experiences of, I got on TRT, I saw these changes, here's why I think it's great for you. Some of them will then have links to a TRT clinic, but is that necessarily specifically advertising that clinic? And that's where I think some of the current regulations are perhaps falling down, and where we're seeing a rise of this influencer advertising and promoted links, sponsored links, and that sort of thing. The other factor that I think is important for why we're seeing a lot more adverts for lifestyle medicines, so things like your TRT, GLP-1 medicines like semaglutide, and arguably sexual enhancers as well, is just general cultural changes. On the one hand, you've got the rise of fitness cultures where there's a lot of emphasis on working out, going to the gym. If you look at stats on numbers of people going to the gym and you look at social media content, what are the most popular trends on social media? It's often fitness trends, working out. And if it's not that, it's things around men's health and vitality. So because there's been this cultural shift towards these are our ideals, what tends to get you likes if you're on the fitness side of social media is having that idealized body, that kind of archetype of the, you know, enhanced person. But then simultaneously more on the well-being side with like anti-aging medicines, the rate of people getting prescription testosterone for things like anti-aging has massively increased. And then potentially that's then normalizing the idea of, okay, testosterone is more of a medicine. So then if advertising is now promoting that more to younger men who perhaps have less need for it, because it's become so normalized and talked about, whether on podcasts or social media or even print media, things like Men's Health, that potentially is also why we're now seeing more adverts from these companies that are selling testosterone home checking kits and obviously the promise of prescription testosterone if you use those.
Awesome. I think you touched on kind of everything that's really going on right now on a higher level and a lot of things that we're going to get into today. So with your expertise in enhancement drugs, as well as your work on articles such as semaglutide, testosterone, and sildenafil, advertising on social media, the normalization of lifestyle enhancement drugs. What exactly is going on right now regarding these drugs and their circulation throughout social media? So you kind of touched on with the culture and kind of and these drugs just coming to market. Can you kind of summarize that on how they're all coming together?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can go through those three types of drug in turn, if that's probably easiest. So starting with the GLP-1 medicines, so semaglutide, tirzepatide, those obviously started off as they were prescribed for treating diabetes. And there has been a recent shift as we've understood these are very good for weight loss. In the UK, they were recently, a couple of them were approved for weight loss. There's others that aren't yet approved, like retatrutide. But the ones people are buying, semaglutide, which is Ozempic and Wegovy, tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro, and liraglutide, which is Saxenda, those tend to be the ones that are getting promoted. And those have been approved as prescription-only medicines that you can access through your doctor if you need them for weight loss purposes. And that's for people on prescription with a high BMI. I think it's 30 off the top of my head, but it's designed obviously for those who need that type of drug to control their weight. What we've seen since about 2021, 2022 is just an explosion of interest from people who don't fit within those categories. And of course, this is prior to them being approved for weight loss. Them being approved for weight loss came about a year after this explosion, where there was a trend on a lot of social media sites, particularly TikTok, where people were coming to the realization these were really effective for weight management. And a lot of the people who are promoting these were not people who would fall in that higher level of BMI. They were people who just perceived themselves as slightly overweight or wanted to get in better shape, you know, get in shape for summer or whatever. And so there was just this explosion. You probably remember some of the articles around that time saying there's been a shortage of diabetes medicines because so many people have started seeking them out because of social media. So that's kind of the background to this explosion. And then as this awareness of these drugs got everywhere, we then saw a rise in advertising. And there's so many companies in that article, I listed a few of them, where they are promising and they're putting out paid advertisements on places like YouTube and Facebook saying, you know, we sell this for X amount of money. Now, technically, a prescription-only medicine in the UK, you can't say you can buy this from us for this amount. That's not how prescription works, but these companies are doing it. And then for the kind of influencer culture, there's a lot of like beauty pages, fitness pages, this sort of thing, that they often are sponsored by more of like an illicit company to sell. So these kind of like peptide sellers and so on, they will have influencers who they give free product to, and they perhaps have a referral link. You click their link and they get a kickback. And those are essentially selling potentially quite sketchy products when you buy from them, because they're often not actual prescription medicines, even if they appear to be. They're very likely produced in China in powder form, not necessarily the highest quality. Ashraf and colleagues did some research on this, checking ordering semaglutide over the internet, and they found quite a big degree of variation in what's underdosed, what's overdosed. Some of it was as much as 39% overdosed, which of course presents a risk. And that's being shipped to, for instance, the UK, where it's often then being drawn up into insulin syringes after being reconstituted and just sent out in an insulin syringe with perhaps handwritten instructions on this is the doses you should be using, which of course has a lot of potential for harm. So there's quite a few difficulties with just the prevalence of this. And also, do consumers necessarily know what is legitimate pharmaceutical product versus, oh, this is sold by this beauty page, and they have no idea that actually that is, chances are, not safe to use. And even if it is, does the dosing information being given by that seller even reflect what the clinical dosing protocols should be? Because you're meant to titrate up GLP-1 medicines. Where their users know that. We've certainly got examples. The BBC have reports on some examples where people have been hospitalized, have been put into hypoglycemic comas from using these drugs. So that's kind of the background to the GLP medicines. In terms of testosterone, again, it's kind of twofold in that you have this illicit market and you have the TRT market. So you've long had bodybuilders and so on use testosterone and use steroids. And so with the rise in gym and fitness accounts and fitness influencers, quite a few of these are either directly selling or they're sharing links to people who are selling illicit testosterone, being a scheduled drug, a class C drug in Britain, obviously higher classification in the US. And those are premised around, you know, getting big, getting ripped, getting shredded. And it's mostly these male kind of fitness influencers. But what we're also seeing is the rise of these TRT services, where some of that is by fitness type influencers, but some of it is more general advertising that's going out everywhere on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube even. And that's for the check your testosterone levels, buy our home testing kit. They'll generally list a range of symptoms and things that they say could be associated with low testosterone to encourage people to buy their testing kits and then hopefully be paying them for a prescription test. So obviously TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, that traditionally has been for older men when your natural testosterone levels start to decline, potentially as they say about the male menopause, and it can be used as a treatment for that. It might also be used for men with hypergonadism or specific medical conditions. But with these recent trends in advertising, a lot of them seem to be targeting a younger demographic. If you look at some of the men in the adverts, they'll be using guys in their late 20s, for instance, not traditionally a market who particularly needs TRT. They should, unless they have a specific medical condition, or maybe if they messed around with a lot of steroids when younger and tank their testosterone levels, they shouldn't really be the market for this. But some of the language that's used to promote it, there's some posts are saying about testosterone levels are declining worldwide. Your grandfather had much higher testosterone levels than you do now. Get your levels checked. Some of it's to do with, oh, if you're feeling down, if you're feeling fatigued, if you struggle to concentrate, you probably have low testosterone. And some of it is also based around libido and sexual performance, which I'll probably come to in a second because that ties in with the third example I want to use of the sexual enhancers. But obviously, all these claims very much frame it around if you have this condition or you have this concern, or potentially in that kind of broader masculinity, oh, testosterone levels are declining population-wide. It's all very much targeted to your problems now are the result of low testosterone, so you need to get on this. And as I said, the men they're primarily marketing to are not the men who most need TRT. So with the low libido adverts, there's one example used in the article. It said something to the effect of, sex isn't everything, said the man with low testosterone. So it's playing on this idea that you need testosterone for sexual performance. And if you don't have peak sexual performance, it's probably because you have low testosterone and you should buy our kits, get tested, get a prescription. Now, Andrew Richardson's done some interesting work around this area. And essentially what's happening very much as with the gym and fitness culture, everything's moving towards this enhanced ideal of these guys on steroids are setting the norm. For sex, it seems to be that kind of the porn consumption is so prevalent that a lot of guys are looking at that thinking, that's what sex is supposed to look like. If I don't have porn star performance, that means there's something wrong with me. And so companies advertising testosterone prey on that, but so potentially do the ones that are selling these sexual enhancers. So drugs like tadalafil, sildenafil, those are being promoted, again, to young men. So not the population who medically tends to need them, tends to be, it's generally older men who suffer from clinical erectile dysfunction, but they're being promoted as these more recreational drugs. So Blue Chew was like the big one that I remember several years ago, back 2018, and various podcasts had promoted it. Come Town would be an obvious example. Those guys would talk about using Blue Chew. So you've got a bunch of guys in their late 20s, early 30s saying about, oh, Blue Chew is so good. It helps with your sexual performance. A range of influencers promoting it. Now, again, with advertisements, the problem is if you're promoting these drugs to people who wouldn't necessarily clinically need them, but you're leading them to believe you need them because you don't have this porn star sexual performance, the problem is you can create psychological dependency from using these drugs. So though it's being sold as like this recreational thing and just have more fun sex and your sex will be better using this, obviously that can then lead to actual erectile dysfunction occurring once they become dependent psychologically on them.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that was a great overview. Talking about kind of looking forward a little bit, what do you think that the overall impact would be on patients and public health if the way that these drugs are promoting kind of increases or continues throughout the next 10, 20 years?
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance it leads to a normalization of notions, essentially that you have to be enhanced to be able to keep up in the culture. We've seen it with, you look at various things, that the rates of sexual enhancer use doubled over something like a 4-year period in the 2010s, rates of TRT massively grew in the 2000s, and then again in the late 2010s. So there does seem to be this trend of the more this messaging gets out there, the more it's promoted, the more people feel that they need to be using these drugs, and the higher and higher the rates appear to go. So it's kind of this, the sheer prevalence of discussion, I think, leads people to think, oh, this is everywhere. This is something I should be doing. Everybody's doing it. And you can kind of see that for other drugs. So with steroids and gym culture, because if you're a bodybuilder and all the bodybuilders you know are using steroids, you're going to be more likely to use the steroids. You've got that access, that availability, that opportunity, but you also have that social and cultural normalization, that acceptance of the drugs. So with social media, if you're logging in and you're looking at either gym pages or you're looking at like men's health pages, just the sheer prevalence of either explicit adverts or sponsored content, influencer posts about this stuff, because it's so prevalent, and importantly, because they don't talk about the negatives, it's all focused on the positives. It's like, take this drug and you'll get all your aesthetic goals you want, or you'll get all your well-being goals you want, or you'll perform amazing sexually. And they don't necessarily discuss what are those problems that come with this, like dependency. So I could talk about those harms a little bit if you wanted.
So I wanted to move into counseling on these products. So at the end of the day, it's best that these patients using often advertised drugs, that they go seek help from pharmacists or other providers that can counsel them through this. If these issues kind of continue and patients don't realize, who's going to be responsible for dealing with these challenges and helping educate those patients?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a real challenge for pharmacists and healthcare providers and so on, particularly with the prevalence. So I guess the first issue is, are people necessarily even talking to healthcare providers if it's so easily accessible online? That presents a real challenge, because traditionally, if I'm worried I have low testosterone, maybe I go talk to my doctor and they test me. And if I come back, you know, within the normal range, they might say, hey, this is normal, but if you're having these symptoms, here are things you might want to do, like lifestyle wise or other issues they might want to look at. Obviously, I'm not sure that everyone is engaging with that side of the process, given how prevalent and available these drugs are and how much they're advertised. If I'm worried about I have low testosterone, I might just click to buy a home testing kit from a clinic, and they tell me, oh yeah, we can prescribe you testosterone, and then I go ahead and do it. Now, the research on that, Dubin and colleagues did some secret shopping in the US looking at those direct-to-consumer clinics, and they found that 85% of the clinics they looked at would prescribe to people who were just in the normal range, but quite substantially within it, had no concerns of low testosterone. They were aiming for 1,000 nanograms per deciliter of testosterone, which is actually quite a high amount. That's like top end of normal. But the clinics were still prescribing in these cases, and that was half the clinics. So obviously, given how easy it is to get those prescriptions, I don't think secret shopper work has been done in the UK, but the same incentives that lead to that in the US exist over here in terms of people paying for private healthcare. So I think, given that, it does create a real challenge for healthcare providers, for pharmacists, of what do we do to make sure that appropriate harm reduction information is being delivered. So with testosterone, if you take testosterone when you don't medically need it, the problem is you are then suppressing your endogenous testosterone production. So by adding the exogenous testosterone, now you're not, your body isn't producing it as much as it would have. So if you were to come off that testosterone, you'll actually have lower levels and you probably would be clinically low. That's why bodybuilders and so on take specific drugs to offset that, post-cycle therapy drugs. So do people who are buying these test kits and then getting prescription testosterone, do they necessarily know that actually you are going to give yourself low testosterone by using this? You're going to either need to stay on it, or you're going to need some intervention to restore your natural levels. So it's how do you make sure that information gets out to people who may just be clicking and ordering something from a website? So it might be that pharmacists or general medical practitioners do need to focus on outreach and what are the ways that we can get this message across to general social media consumers. So it's very well, I can publish academic articles talking about, well, these are the potential harms, this is where you need to watch out for this. But is someone who's seeing these adverts on Instagram or TikTok or something, are they going to get that information? So I think that's probably the main thing that those kind of providers and people responsible need to think about, is actually how do we engage these people now in the social media age?
For sure. We will be continue to keep eyes on this and as it kind of develops. That's all I have for you. I really appreciate you taking the time and kind of sharing your insights.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on, bro.